1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey y'all, it's me, Seba, and it's been raining here. It's been raining for 2 solid days, and half of the yard is flooded, but that is to be expected. But I wanted to share with y'all that the trees are literally covered in peaches and pears, and it is the first year in a while. Very exciting, very happy making. And while I was out there, I found a bloom I haven't seen in a long time, a daisy fleabane. I don't know if y'all know what that is. It kind of looks like a very tiny daisy. Anyway, it's common. And I suddenly had a memory. And as y'all all know, I'm going through something extraordinarily dramatic and trying to get through it the best I can. And some days are harder than others. And the last couple of days have been very hard. It's not so much being alone. I've never really minded that too much at all. It's the feeling of being thrown away. And it's horrible. It's horrible. I thought it was going to get better, and it's actually gotten a little bit worse. But, you know, I don't have a lot of choices right now but to work through it. And when I saw this tiny little flower, I was suddenly slung back into time, and I remembered going through trauma as a child in an odd way, kind of similar to what I'm going through now, because it was about a parent who abandoned me. And I remember being in that kind of trauma. Somewhere between 8 and 10 was when I remember this stuff, and it made me want to talk to y'all today about magical children and their experiences, and how some of those experiences, well, number one, they need to be nourished and they need to be supported. But quite honestly, it's one of the very few things that is getting me through today. So if y'all don't mind going down memory lane with a Gen Xer, that's what I wanted to do today. And my experience is very unique to Gen X children. I think it would be an anomaly if other generations went through what we went through. But yeah. So when I was young and my mother emotionally just abandoned the hell out of me, and there was some really heavy trauma going on in my home, I would run into the woods. And that is where I found all of my solace and all of my magic. And honestly, the only friends that I could find other than my grandma was out there in that woods. Some of my memories are very specific to that particular woods, even though I would learn over time to kind of morph with wherever I went. And we had a forest of loblolly pine. And I tell you what, the smell of pine leaves in the fall always takes me back there. And I wasn't really allowed to take any toys with me to the woods ever, but I also wasn't guarded over. Part of my generation would understand this. We would be kicked out early in the morning on a Saturday or a Sunday, and they'd holler for us if it were dark, maybe if we were lucky or unlucky, depending on who we lived with. So we were really on our own most of the time. And for a little girl without any friends going through what I was going through, well, I don't know. I guess the woods just took me in. And I remember doing all kinds of things out there. One of the things I did, and the reason the memory popped so hard, was I would pretend to cook. It's one of my favorite things. I no longer really have a decent kitchen to cook in. And that's been one of the hardships of this experience, is that my kitchen is demolished. But cooking always brought me pleasure. My grandma taught me how to do it when I was little. So when I was home in that rough house and all that trauma, I would run outside and I would pretend to cook. And daisy fleabane or common fleabane, whatever y'all call it. Well, it was perfect because it had that little white edge going around it and the yellow center. And those were eggs and nobody could tell me any different. And long before I knew to look for what was medicinal and what could be eaten, I ate a shit ton of fleabane. So, I'm really lucky because there's no telling what all. I don't know. I think the woods was really protecting me. I don't think it would have let me actually poison myself. But yeah, I would pretend to cook and I would feel very unsafe and very anxious. Usually I would run out because of the screaming going on in the home. And I would take these pine needles and I would kind of bunch them together in long lines and I would create a home out of them. Kind of a blueprint on the floor of the woods there. And I would close the little door with a stick that I could open and close and imagine that it was protecting me. Imagine that it was a safe place for me to inhabit, you know, like casting a circle. And within that, I would do my little projects and activities. I always had thread. I always had thread because my mother sewed. So I would steal away with a little bit of that and make stick dolls and tie them together so I would have friends. And it was magical. And one of those nights, my mother forgot to call me in. And I'd taken my AM FM radio with me. That was allowable. And it was playing and the sun went down and it was that beautiful place, you know, dusk where it's almost dark and you can like see the indigo and it's fading into the black, but it's not quite there. And that's the moment that lightning bugs come out, baby. And that night I was left to my own devices out there in that woods. And the lightning bugs were sparkling and the song by a band called King Harvest was playing. It was the first time I'd heard it, and it was called Dancing in the Moonlight. And to this day, it really is just one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, and it takes me right back to 1970-something and Bonnie Bell lip gloss and, you know, hip huggers and bare feet in the woods. It is my favorite memory. This night. And like I said, I didn't have a lot of friends and I was in a lot of pain. I had my ass beat a lot, you know, and that was the night that I got introduced to some woodland creatures that were not animal in nature. I don't know if you get my drift, but they came right up to me and they talked to me and they were very gentle with me, as, you know, historically they can be with children. And I remember drifting off to sleep underneath those pine trees. I don't remember how I got in the house or if I got in the house or what happened. But I do know that was a magical night. I do believe, I will always believe, that the woods will take care of the broken ones and the ones that nobody wants and the abandoned ones. I do believe that is true. For the most part, anyway. And I do believe that children find magic when they have nothing else. A lot of what has created some of us witches was that treatment, was that lack. And we had to find it elsewhere. And when you're raised by the fae and the trees and the land spirits and fireflies, I reckon you don't forget. It sort of stays there and harbors in your chest and waits in case you ever need it again. Because as far as I'm concerned, from my experience, I am always a child to that woods, wherever I am. And I know there are dark things there, but some of my best friends have come from those locations. So all of this to say that I think that we are not, I don't know, always cognizant of the magic we do take away from children. and how important it is to their upbringing, just as important as vitamins and good solid food and a safe place to sleep at night, because it gives us hope when it's all gone, when it gives us possibility when we feel like we have no choice. You know, I find it funny that we grow up and we talk about servitors or other thought forms and then kind of, I don't know, negate or dishonor the idea of imaginary friends for children. Because as far as I'm concerned, that's a thought form. Well, usually, sometimes it might be something else. However, those are real experiences that children have. And I've been taught a lot by that kind of magic when I was a child. I think I was born with natural empathy for other living creatures and places, but I think the creatures of the forest and the forest itself as an entity taught me empathy as well. I mean, it might have been something as small as watching another child take the end off of a lightning bug and squishing it. I don't know if y'all did that when you were children. I wasn't able to do it. I went home and cried for like, you know, the rest of the night because it killed the lightning bug. It killed the lightning bug. And then I was just heartbroken, especially since I had looked up and did know, I had National Geographic, the book. I did know how long they lived. And you just took away what little bit of life they had. It just would kill me. I was just in shatters over that. But I don't think all children necessarily had that experience. You know, they were catching them from their backyard, their very perfectly manicured yard. There's just not a lot of empathy there. There's not a lot to be taught there. And so, I mean, it's understandable. I remember when my sons were really little, we had a bat in the attic of the home we lived in, and they were so terrified and they wanted me to call pest control and have it killed and all this kind of nonsense. That's not what I did. What I did do was take them to a bat sanctuary out here where I live that was running this like educational whatever in the summer. And we were given these sonic devices that would make sounds so that they would dive towards us and we could see them better. And the people there had a live bat that was treated very ethically, was at a university, and let my children pet the bat. And of course, now we just know them as sky puppies, or my kids do. And then at the very end, they were selling these bat houses, and they were the right, you know, shape and wood and everything. And I bought two. And what we did instead was we shooed them out of the attic, which they were terrified of. And they set up home in the bat houses, which is kind of hard to get them to do, but it taught my children the magic of these creatures. And so then what I started to do was every night at dusk, because we all know that is the most magical time, go out and sit on the porch and watch them dive, you know, especially in the summer for the mosquitoes and things. And it's just such a beautiful show. That kind of magic that they learn from nature, well, it also teaches them empathy, natural empathy. And I had other not so wonderful experiences with magic as a child. I grew up in a crazily haunted home, incredibly haunted. I had a mirror in my room and things would lean out in the middle of the night. That was terrifying. I still have that mirror, but we've had come to an agreement, my grown-up self and that mirror. But I do remember going into my little sister's room when they were only 2 years old because they were crying in their sleep and I heard them. And I opened the door and all of their dolls and stuffed animals were in the air. And the second I went, ah, they all fell. And then I got in trouble because my mother thought that I had thrown all of her stuffed animals in the middle of the room. That was terrifying. From then on, well, as a young kid, I learned to talk to things. You know, hey, That scared me. Please don't do that anymore. And I learned to talk to haints that were kind and good and kind of employ them, if you will, to help me keep some of these assholes away at night. And, you know, I wasn't validated on any of that experience. Of course not. We invalidate children and the things that they see or hear. We tell them that that isn't real. So as they're growing up, they are told that their experience is not real. And that actually does not do them any service at all. But I've put a lot of that to the test lately. When I find myself breaking recently, the only place that helps, the only place that will validate that feeling is the woods. It's the land spirits and the oogie boogies and the unseen and the trees. They're where I go now. And when I do, I feel like a little kid again. You know, when you're a little kid and you're walking in the woods and you're trying not to make any sounds, so you blend in with nature. I find myself doing that again. At 57, I find myself being careful and becoming one with it and all of those things that used to be second nature to me when I was 10 are all coming back now. I was crying over a patch of lilies. No, wait, it wasn't. It was irises. It doesn't matter. I was crying over them yesterday because I remember planting them and having so much hope. And I remember the person I was then and how much I trusted someone then. And it really does feel like a death, you know? It really does feel like someone died. And I was crying over this little patch. And then my son ran in today and said, "Hey, get out here. They bloomed." They bloomed. And I can explain that away. But that is the impulse of a grown-up to try to explain that away. The heart of a child would say, it's a sign. The heart of a child would say, they bloom to show you love, to show you you're not alone. And because I didn't have a lot of love as a child, other than from my grandma, who I didn't get to see all the time, I learned to accept love and lessons and guidance and even, you know, lessons about heartbreak from nature. It's where I learned. And that's why I call her Big Mama, because it's the only mama I ever really, truly got to have. And just because they can't talk to us, all those spirits and trees and all of that, in the way that we're used to, I think a lot of the time it's because we've closed something down in us and we have to open it back up. But they're still talking. They're still trying to teach. They're trying to comfort. It's all still right there, y'all. You know, whenever I bless water and I take people to water and I put their hands down in there to cleanse them of all their, you know, crappy energy and let it go into that water, I always tell them, let go. She can take it because she can. And over the winter when I was so heartbroken, still there, by the way, but there were times that I just fell and sat on the ground and put my hands down and cried into her, right into her, because she can take it. Because for some of us witches, this is the only mama we've ever truly had. So of course, as I grew up and became the witch I am today, animism was easy. It was a no-brainer. I'd seen stuffed animals fly in the air. I've seen animals turn like they were trying to tell me something and pop me in the nose when it was important. I've seen a tree with no wind lean a branch down to me and touch my face. I have known that things have spirits and things have magic if we're willing to look for them or accept them. Really, it's not even the looking for it. It's the being still and accepting it. I've known this forever. So of course I'm an animist. It's a side effect of the one who raised me. And y'all, I have still not had the heart nor the physical capacity to begin a farm this year. I really don't think I can do it. I really don't. But I have scattered some sunflower seeds, and my beautiful son has taken pumpkin seeds from last year's pumpkins and thrown them in the high tunnel. It may be a wild garden this year. It may be a healing one. But honestly, those are the best ones to learn from, aren't they? And while it's very sad for me to finally come to terms with the fact that I've never really been loved by a partner in my life, I have to tell y'all, that dream dying almost killed me. But I have been loved by children, and I have been loved by animals in the way that I need to be loved and never abandoned. Let me tell y'all a story real quick. I think I've told you before, but it was a very long time ago if I did. Years, honestly. About that same time I was telling y'all about 10, I reckon, I got a kitty cat, and her name was Angel because, you know, I was 10. And I loved her. She was gray and had stripes and big old green eyes, and she loved me. And this is a really cool story. This is a story about a cat who did make it living outside. A lot of cats can't do that. And maybe it was because she was a 70s cat. I don't know. But I loved her. She used to sleep in my tennis shoe. We called them tennis shoes when we were little. And I remember laying there with her and looking in her eyes when she got bigger and trying to talk to her and believing I could hear her. And I'd lay there for hours taking in what I thought she was trying to tell me. And that cat would follow me everywhere. She loved me so much. And when my mother moved us to New Jersey for a couple of years, that was horrible, we brought Angel with us. So she lived there too. But they forced her to live in the basement. And I can't imagine the loneliness of that. I mean, I know it was a big basement, but she was, you know, she liked people. And she was relegated down there. That was very sad. And I got kicked out of the house. I got abandoned there by my mother when I was 14, I believe, in the cold, in the snow, right before Christmas, onto the street without my coat. I had to go down to a neighbor's house and beg them to use the telephone. And I called my grandma, Collect, down in Alabama, and she called my mother and fussed at her and said, "Give my baby that coat." And she wanted me to wait for her. Call back, but I was so heartbroken, I just ran and then commenced living on the streets for a very long time. Being abandoned by your mommy is not something that you get over very easy. And I was only 14. Anyway, that meant that I couldn't see my cat. And then long about the time I turned, I want to say 19, yeah, I had a baby. And that same year, my mother and my stepfather moved to Florida, and they got back in contact with me, and it all ends in abandonment again, so don't worry. But anyway, they took Angel with them. And somewhere along the way, I do remember this story, but I don't know exactly how it goes, but they lost her somewhere, and somehow she found her way to them anyway. I don't remember the ins and outs of that. So it had been a couple of years past that. I think my daughter was 3 years old, 2 or 3. And I moved down to Florida for a year. And on the way down there, before I left, we didn't have cell phones, y'all. I called my mother and she told me to prepare myself. Apparently, Angel had run off into the woods and they hadn't seen her in a week. And they thought she was probably dead. And it broke my heart. Because I'd wanted to say goodbye to her and have time to see her again. But, you know, I kept on thinking about all those times that we laid there on a red shag carpet in 1975 or 6, I can't remember now, and talking to each other, just talking to each other. She was my best friend there, and I wanted to say goodbye. I'd had all that time stolen from me, and I wanted to say goodbye. So I went to my mama's house. And got the baby settled, and went out back and sat on her back stoop and proceeded to cry. And that back step faced the woods, and I was just sobbing. And every now and again, I'd just yell out, "Angel." They told me she'd been gone a week and she was getting old. And I know cats go off to die. And just as I was about to give up, I saw a little fluffy gray movement under the trees. And she ran right up to me. Well, she limped right up to me. She was very old. And I pet her and I cried. And I told her how much I loved her. And she did that thing that she used to do when I was a little kid and stared in my eyes. And it was a goodbye. It was. It was goodbye. And I was really sad about it. And I tried to talk her out of it, but no. No, I don't think she wanted to die there in somebody's arms. I don't think she wanted to make that kind of hoopla. And I get it now. I get it now. She wanted to run into the woods. It's the best lap there is. She wanted to go back to her mama. Never saw her again. So yeah, I'm an animist. But it's funny. I think so are animals. And so are trees. And so are mushrooms. And so are the moon and the stars. I think everything in nature is an animist. Because we know something for sure. If anything will heal you, it's Big Mama. She's the mother to the lost and the broken and the abandoned. And then the end. Well, she never leaves. So, just some thoughts. I'm about to go out into my own woods here in a minute. It's been a rough day. I've been missing somebody a lot. And no amount of being told I shouldn't is getting through. Turns out I've got a heart. But if I'm going to go bleed somewhere, I know exactly whose lap to bleed in. Y'all don't forget, nurture that magic in a little kid. Sometimes when they're old and you're long gone, it's all they're going to have. I'll add my shout outs before I send this out, y'all, so don't worry. This is a draft for Patreon. Love y'all like chicken. Blessed be. Y'all have been listening to the Southern Fried Witch Podcast. Come back around next week for a little bit more magic from the Deep South.